If a man does not keep pace with his companions, perhaps it is because he hears a different drummer. Let him step to the music which he hears, however measured or far away. Henry David Thoreau wrote those words in the conclusion of Walden, first published this week in 1854. Named for the pond in Concord, Massachusetts, Walden became a gospel for environmentalists and a guide for millions of people seeking a more meaningful life. In this week's installment of Present at the Creation, Jill Kaufman of member station WGBH in Boston examines the man who deliberately moved to the beat of a different drummer and his landmark work, Walden, or Life in the Woods.
Henry David Thoreau stood out among the crowd, if only because he didn't like group activities. He had a sharp tongue and was more apt to hug a tree than his fellow man. In an age of popular democracy, he didn't vote. He fought against slavery, but he didn't associate himself directly with the abolitionists. People loved him, but they found it hard to like him. Robert Gross, a professor of American Studies at the College of William and Mary, has been writing about New England history for more than 25 years. He points to the time when Thoreau went to the woods one Sunday morning when almost everyone else was in public worship.
Then he's found a pine tree that he's dug up and he's going to transplant. Does he avoid outraging his neighbors? No, he takes his pine tree and parades down the street. And his aunt says to him, "How could you do this on the Sabbath? Defame it." And he says, "Aunt, I don't tell you how to worship. You don't tell me how to worship."
Thoreau simply paid no attention to the conventions of Concord. He also rejected the wave of change taking place economically. In the Northeast, the opening of the Erie Canal made Western wheat cheaper to buy, so there was no more point in growing rye locally. Textiles from the nearby Lowell Mills were cheaper, so people stopped raising sheep for wool to make clothes. Stores in Concord proudly stocked their shelves with products from outside New England. Thoreau didn't like what he saw. He wasn't anti-progress, but he wrote in Walden, "It is not worth the while to go round the world to count the cats in Zanzibar," which simply meant you can find what you need closer to home. Going to Walden was an attempt to prove that, and to cultivate through nature what Thoreau would call his higher self. Robert Gross says Thoreau took to treating the land with a kind of reverence.
For example, when he grows beans, his aim, he says, is to grow the beans to sell on the market so he can have money for the rice that he actually wants to eat. But ultimately, he says, his real purpose is not to grow beans, but to know beans.
This is a transcendentalist in action. Thoreau was part of a mid-19th century group of progressive men and women who often met at the home of Ralph Waldo Emerson. They were reformers, poets, writers, and philosophers. Among other things, they believed that nature and the human soul were divine. Divinity could be found right outside your own front door. Thoreau wanted to test this transcendentalist philosophy, so he went to Walden, built a cabin, and lived there by himself for a little more than 2 years. Today, there are more trees surrounding Walden Pond than in Thoreau's day, and the pond is more the size of a small lake. It's a sacred spot for Thoreau followers, like biographer and historian Robert Richardson.
You come out here at 6 o'clock in the morning on a day when there's a little bit of fog rolling up off the pond. It could be the first day of creation.
Thoreau's cabin is no longer here. There's a large pile of stones near the site, placed there by thousands of people who come from all over the world to pay tribute to Thoreau.
This is the cove. Back of which Thoreau put his cabin up about, you'll see, about 150 feet up from the water's edge. So it wasn't right on the edge of the water, because the wind in winter can be really cold and really icy. Back up, be a little protection up there. The train runs right over there.
It does now, and it did then. The Industrial Revolution was going right through Thoreau's backyard. He originally went to Walden to find peace and quiet so he could write a book about his brother who died several years earlier. The train, with its noise and cargo, was a daily reminder that Concord was losing something by gaining a connection to the larger world. When Thoreau writes in Walden that the mass of men lead lives of quiet desperation, it's an accusation that his neighbors are wasting their lives consuming. He wanted everyone to drive life into a corner and reduce it to its simplest terms. Don't get in a carriage to go somewhere, walk. Don't shop in a store, grow your food. Don't buy firewood, cut down your own trees. He spoke and wrote in the extreme, admittedly sometimes. All he really wanted to get across was the message, simplify, simplify.
He wanted to find out just what was life, what is absolutely necessary and what is superfluous.
Thomas Blanding has been called the walking embodiment of Henry David Thoreau. As a graduate student, he painstakingly restored missing pages of Thoreau's journals. The ones Thoreau kept at Walden were filled with details of what he ate and who came to visit, the pond's animal life, what crops he grew. Thomas Blanding says he was documenting his surroundings with the facts, but he was also writing about his life.
He uses the pond as an archetypal symbol, a universal symbol. He likens it, for example, to a spring. He calls it the Spring of Springs. It is a well to Thoreau. It is a perfect forest mirror.
The trick to reading Walden, Blanding says, is not to read it too literally. There is metaphor on every page, satire too. He says to get at the spirituality in Walden, read it as if it were poetry or even scripture. After 9 years and 7 self-edits, Walden was published in August of 1854. Unlike his first book, it sold successfully. And over time, Walden became the manifesto of the environmentalist movement in the U.S. It's not easy living a simple life. Not everyone would choose it. Again, biographer Robert Richardson.
You have to have rather large internal resources to live to yourself and by yourself. But there are always a few people. There's always enough to keep the idea alive.
People tend to think Thoreau lived at the pond forever, but he returned to town, gardened, and surveyed land, and went on to write other important works, most notably the essay Civil Disobedience. Great leaders like Gandhi and Martin Luther King described it as one of the prime influences on their own philosophy. Concord is now happy to call Thoreau a native son. His name is plastered on street signs and buildings throughout town. Even farm stands here proudly peddle honey from Thoreau country. What would Thoreau make of that? For NPR News, I'm Jill Kaufman in Concord, Massachusetts.
Excerpts from the book Walden are at npr.org or your local station website. This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Renee Montaigne.